So welcome to How to Land a Traditional Publishing Book Deal. I appreciate you being here. It is my honor to talk to you today and to share this with you. This is information that I wish I had had early on in my career. So, to me, this is my service, my give back to all of you. To have you learn from my experience, I guess I would say. Anyway, we're going to dive in. And here we go. Everything works correctly. Okay, so I know most of you have read through this in my emails or might know this about me, but for anyone who watches this later and is new to me, I just thought I'd run through this very quickly. Why learn from me? In the last month, I've probably seen. Actually, when I after I decided to run this session for all of you, I probably saw three different people posting or promoting similar events about how to get traditionally published. But some of them were like just like marketers, they weren't authors. And so why would you want to come here and learn from me? Who am I to share this information with you? So I'm just going to run through this quickly. I've been in the publishing game since 2005 when I sent out my first nonfiction book proposal, which I did get some feedback, some con my brain isn't working this morning. I did get feedback from that. Like I had a publisher contact me, an agent contact me. So right off the bat, I was getting some success. I didn't land a book deal, but I was getting some success. I've had six different literary agents, and I'll talk more about that later, about why I've had so many and whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. I've signed five different publishing contracts. One of them was for a, so how to blog a book, creative visualization for writers, the author training manual, but then there was a revision or a second edition of how to blog a book. So that was the fourth contract. And now I have a contract with Books That Save Lives for a book about writing for change. So, and hopefully I'll have another contract coming soon. So I've signed five different publishing contracts. I'm the author of the books I just mentioned to you. I've had 19 books on the Amazon Top 100 list, six of them simultaneously on the authorship list. So that's the bestseller list on Amazon, the Top 100. I've been privy to the information shared by experts for 19 years at the San Francisco Writers Conference, and I run two tracks there now. That conference, I think, is the best conference in the country. And I, for many, many years, I sat in on sessions. Now I'm usually too busy to sit on many sessions when I'm there. But I met agents there. I met experts there. I interviewed them. So I feel like that was a really great education for me. And as I said, I've interviewed my fair share of publishing pros. I've mostly done that for the Nonfiction Writers University. And I'll talk a little bit more about that near the end. I'm considered a nonfiction writing and publishing expert because primarily it was because of my blog, Write Nonfiction Now. And then there were my books and also the blog, How to Blog a Book. I've spoken at writing conferences around the country and in Mexico. I've established an effective author coach, or I should say, I am an established and effective author coach and nonfiction developmental editor. I have editing projects that were published by publishing companies verbatim. They didn't change a word. I have several clients who have landed traditional publishing deals without the big platforms and all of that. I just had somebody write to me and tell me how, I helped him land his deal. He did it without an agent. I have people who have, clients who have had agents. I have clients who have self-published. Oops, I went the wrong way. Here we go. More recently, I broke a 4-year dry spell in my career as an author. So those who work with me know that I had 4 years after I broke up with an agent, or the agent broke up with me in that case, where I didn't write. I lost my confidence and I was only writing my blogs, and that was it. But In the last year, I signed a traditional publishing contract without an agent for a book project that's been over a decade in the making, the one with Books That Save Lives. I signed with a new literary agent who's about to start pitching a different project in a new subject area, personal and spiritual growth, to publishers. It's kind of a crossover book because it has some writing involved. I also got the rights back from Penguin Random House to one of my traditionally published books, which sounds crazy, right? Who wouldn't want to be published by Penguin Random House? But I'll talk a little bit more about that later. And I've also self-published numerous books, but many are about writing, publishing, and blogging. So I tell you all that because I'm in the trenches, just like you. I've been there and done that and more. And I know more than a little bit about how to get a traditional publishing deal. So, what I promised to deliver to you is that I would spend the first part of the session outlining the essential steps to becoming a traditionally published author, discussing the pros and cons of traditional publishing, pulling back the curtain on what I've experienced as a traditionally published author in what I would say is an ever-changing traditional publishing landscape. And then I will put on my author coaching hat and focus the session on answering all your questions. So, we'll do that at the end. All right, so let's start with what is traditional publishing? Traditional publishing is essentially a venture capital deal between a writer who has the idea for a product and a publishing company who agrees to invest in the product, the book idea, and bring it to market by providing the means to produce and distribute it. So my husband has worked in startup companies for many years. And he was always talking about venture capital partners. And suddenly it just clicked to me that the publisher is the venture capital partner. The writer is the person with a product, a book to bring to market. And the publisher is going to invest their money in the idea, in the writer, and in the production of the book and the distribution of the book. So that's really how it works. It's a business deal. And the publisher is seeking not only a marketable book idea, something they know will sell or they feel pretty sure will sell, and they're looking for a good business partner. And the issue is that most writers don't see themselves as business people, but this is a business deal. Okay. And so we need to be good business partners. Now, you prove that you have a marketable book idea and a good business partner with a business plan for a book, and that is your book proposal. Okay? And we're talking primarily here about nonfiction books. If at the end somebody wants to ask me questions about fiction, I am happy to answer them. Okay? Or you can even put them in the chat. I'll put the chat up so I can see it, because right now I can't. There we go. Oh, thank you, Beth. Beth said, congratulations. Okay, so yeah, so if you have questions about fiction, just put them in the chat or ask me at the end. Okay, so the essential steps to becoming a traditional published nonfiction author. This is probably the most important thing that I said I would deliver to you. And so we're going to go through this one by one. So you want to complete these particular steps. Number one, you have to conceptualize your book. Okay, so you have to have a book idea. And then you need to take that book idea and begin to map it out. As I would say, I like mind maps. So very often I will map out a book using a mind map. But this could just be an outline. It could be a list of the chapters you think you'll include. Anything that gets you from idea to something that looks more like a book. So let's just say you assume you'll have 10 chapters. If you could write down the titles of your chapters and have a few bullet points about what's going in those chapters, now you have actually conceptualized a book. You don't just have an idea for a book, you have a concept. You have the start to your content plan. Okay? So you have to at least start there. Then I suggest you write a book proposal. Now, we're talking about traditional publishing here, but if you were self-publishing, I would suggest you write a book proposal as well because it is the business plan for your book. Not only that, in the initial stages of writing a book proposal, you're going to use this document to develop your book idea. and ensure it's marketable. So it's about writing the best book you can write. And the book proposal helps you do that. And we're going to talk more about the parts of a book proposal, I promise. But just know that you want to create some sort of a business plan for your book. And we're going to go through all the different steps of that. Okay, the third step is to write 2 to 3 sample chapters. For a nonfiction book, you don't need a straight nonfiction book, like a prescriptive nonfiction book. You don't need to have written the whole book. You just need a couple sample chapters, like, I don't know, 15, 20,000 words, 30,000 words of, well, 30,000 is too much. I take that back. So 10 to 20,000, because the average nonfiction book that a publisher wants to publish is going to be about 50,000 words. So you don't need to give them half the book. That was, so we don't have to do that, but you ought to give them a couple chapters. So if you figure that each of your chapters is 5,000 words, you're giving them 10,000 words. If you figure your chapters are more like 7,000 words, you're going to give them 14,000 words, right? If you're going to write chapters that are shorter, you might include more chapters, okay? But you need some kind of sample chapters, okay? And more than one. So at least two, three if your chapters are short, or if for some reason you feel you need to include that third chapter for some reason. Okay, once you have written the book proposal and you have your sample chapters, which go into the book proposal, you're going to write a query letter. And I'm going to explain all of this. I'm going to go into depth on the book proposal and I'm going to go into more depth on the query letter. Okay, so don't worry, we're going to get there. Anyway, you're going to write a query letter, which says, I have this book idea. Are you interested? And you're going to research literary agents or small publishers. So you can approach a small publishing house on your own without a literary agent. So the deal that I got with, it was initially with Mango Publishing, and now it's with Books That Save Lives. I'll explain that. I did that on my own. My client who just wrote to me about his traditional publishing deal, got it on his own without an agent. Okay, I have another client. He got an agent, then he got a publishing deal. Okay, that's the typical route if you want to go with a bigger publisher or a more established publisher. Only small publishers are going to allow you to approach them unagented, as we say. Okay, so you're going to research some literary agents or small publishing houses, and then you're going to submit this query letter to agents. Okay, or to the small publisher. So you're going to submit the query letter and then you're going to wait and wait and wait and wait until somebody says to you, do you have a book proposal? I'd like to see it. So the agents will ask for the book proposal and so will the publishers. And only when they accept that book proposal will they offer you a contract that you will sign, either with the literary agent or the publisher. The literary agent also needs that document because that's what they're going to use to help sell your book to a publisher. They need that document and they may go over it with you to make changes. That's a process I just finished with my literary agent. Okay. But even when I approached the small publisher, well, Mango wasn't a tiny publisher, but I happen to know the publisher. And so the actual person who is a publisher and who holds that title. And she and I worked on the book proposal some too, because they have to present it to the editorial board. And in her case, there was also the CEO of the company because it was a privately held publishing company. And so, which most of them are, they're independent. They're not affiliated with some large publishing company like Penguin Random House. Anyway, she and I worked on the book proposal to make sure that the CEO liked it, that he was on board. So anyway, there is a process in here with the agent before you actually get to the contract. Okay? All right. Beth says sticky notes. What about sticky notes, Beth? You just drop it in the chat? Oh, for conceptualizing your book. Is that what you're saying? Just write yes. Yes. You could use sticky notes. You can use a mind mapping program. You can use a mind map by hand. I've written about that, where you have a big poster board and you write everything on there and connect the dots. You could use sticky notes. I like the sticky notes idea, Beth, because if you put the sticky notes on a whiteboard or on a poster board, you can move them around very easily, which is also why I like conceptualizing a book using an app, a mind map app or program, because I can actually move things around. So yes, for sure, sticky notes. Okay, so let's dive into what is an actual book proposal, because this is the crux of what you need if you want to land a traditional book publishing deal. So, as I said, a book proposal is a business plan for your book and a way to evaluate your book for success. So, when I wrote the author training manual, the original title for that was How to Evaluate Your Book for Success. I think that was actually, we decided that nobody wanted to evaluate a book, but nobody also wants to read a training manual either. So, I think that in both cases, my titles were not great, and even the traditional publisher later agreed, but that's what we went with. Anyway. It is about evaluating your book for success. And the book proposal is how a publisher or an agent is going to determine whether your book can achieve success. Now, the book proposal is a marketing or sales document meant to sell your book to a literary agent and then to the acquisitions editor. The acquisitions editor at a publishing house is the person who acquires manuscripts, acquires book projects. Now, every publishing company is different. So, as I said, when I went to Mango with my idea, I went straight to the publisher because I happened to know her, right? There was no acquisitions editor other than her. But a bigger publishing house is going to have two or three or more acquisitions editors who are acquiring manuscripts from writers, okay? They still have to take them to the editorial board and have them. And pitch them themselves to the editorial board. And the editorial board may be made up of the publisher or the CEO, the person, people holding those titles, might be the marketing people. I've had that quite often. Matter of fact, Creative Visualization for Writers is only titled that because the marketing team wanted that. It was not the title I wanted for the book. More on that to come. Anyway, you have to create this business plan for your book. And as I said, if you end up self-publishing, you'll be happy you have it. You really will, because it's going to help you create a more marketable book. But we're going to stick to traditional publishing for right now. Okay, so a nonfiction book proposal. Well, I'll just insert this. If you're writing fiction, the nonfiction book proposal is a great way to also create a more marketable novel and to determine how you're going to market it and to whom and all those things. So I say, even if you're writing fiction, you should do a business plan for your book, and you'd be amazed how a publisher might be happy when you show them that. It sets you ahead of the other novelists. Okay. We have 12 sections in a nonfiction book proposal. The first is the table of contents. This is not the table of contents for your book. This is the table of contents for the book proposal, for the document. It will say what page you can find each of these other 11 items. Okay, so you're gonna have a table of contents, and it will start with overview. So overview would be number one in the table of contents for your book proposal. I hope that makes sense to everyone. Okay, so it's the table of contents for the actual book proposal. The first actual section in the book, oh, I should have said, I probably should have put another one. Maybe there were 13. So you do need to have a cover page. Okay, so that's not on here, but you need to have a cover page. And the cover page will have the title of the book and the subtitle, and it will have your name and your contact information until the point that you have a literary agent, at which point the contact information is for your literary agent. Okay, so you have a cover page. And then the table of contents. Okay. Now, the overview. The overview is a sales document. It's a marketing, it's like a 2 to 3 page marketing section that includes the pitch for your book, like the elevator speech for your book. So, a very short statement about your book. It might have an introduction, meaning a couple paragraphs that explain the book or that draw in the reader. It will have inf a little bit of information about you as the author, but not a lot. It will either clearly state or insinuate who the readers are, although your pitch should say that. Any really important details about the book will be in the overview. The idea here is that it is an overview of your book, but it has to be something you can't spend 5 pages on this. It's a pithy, concise, compelling section that describes your book in a way that would make the literary agent or the acquisitions editor read on. They may not even need to. I've heard this story a lot of times from agents. If you do your overview correctly, they may not even bother to read much of the rest of the book proposal because they're so convinced that this is a book they want to publish. That's what you're aiming for in the overview, that you give them just the right amount of information to compel them to want to read more or to buy the book. Okay? So typically, as I said, it has sort of an introduction, then it'll have the pitch, which is a very short statement that describes your book and its readership, its market, its audience, and what makes it unique. It's a unique selling proposition. If you know anything about sales, it's a unique selling proposition. And then, as I said, it'll elaborate on the book a little bit, might have a little bit about who you are and why you're the right person to write the book. Okay? After that, and sometimes these sections, you'll find literary agents want them in different places. Okay, this is sort of the standard order in which these go. All right, spin-offs. Spin-offs are the other books you could write or want to write that are related to the book you're pitching. So maybe you're writing a book on dog training. And then you want to write a book about the use of, like, how to train with an electric collar, how to train with treats, how to train off leash. So these would be spin-off books that you would write after the first book. And the idea here is that the more books you write on a subject, the more books you sell. In general, the more books you write, the more books you sell. But if you have this main book on dog training, and then you have these other subsequent books that are on the same basic topic, but elaborate on something that maybe you even mentioned in the first book, like maybe you mentioned that there are these different ways to train your dog, but now you have a whole book on that. That's a spin-off. And what these spin-offs do is this section convinces an agent and a publisher that you're not a one-book wonder. They don't want a one-book wonder. They want somebody who's going to write more than one book. Okay? So this is your chance to brainstorm other book ideas or to get them down. All you need in this section is the title and subtitle of the book and a brief pitch. So I'm going to talk for a second about pitching. When I first got involved with the San Francisco Writers Conference, they had a pitch contest, and you would pitch your book. And the rule at the very beginning was that you could only have 50 words. You could have more if that 50 words didn't include your title, right? So you could include your title and subtitle and then 50 words. Anyway, it was very short. This is an elevator speech, right? And so when you're doing your spin-offs, each book idea will have a title, a subtitle, and a pitch that is short. I'm talking one sentence, two sentences tops. Okay. The same in your overview, your pitch should be short. And I continually, or I should say, I continue to like the kind of pitch that I was taught to write way back when, and that is one sentence. One sentence is that encompasses it all. You know, there was somebody who once told me if you can't write what your book is about on the back of a business card, you don't know what it's about. It's kind of the same idea. All right, so that's spinoffs. Then we come to the section that is the market analysis. So this is, you could call it the audience analysis. What you're going to do here is you're going to say, my book is going to be written for these people. This is the audience for my book. Now, you might just have one audience. So you might have the audience of, people who have dogs, people who have dogs who need training. But in my experience, I typically have more than one market, more than one audience for my book. And so you're going to list the different people you would, who would want to read your book, these audiences, and you, or markets is what we call them. You're going to list the markets, and then you're going to go out and do research to determine how many people comprise those markets. So I typically look, you might, if you think Gen Z is the reader of your book, that's easy. You go to Google and you Google how many Gen Z, how many people make up Gen Z, and you'll get a number. Right. And so you'll have a number, a statistic, and you'll say why they would want to read your book. Like, why do all these Gen Z people have dogs that need training? Just as an example, right? Okay. And so this is how you go through it. So if you have five different markets, for each one, you want to have some statistics that demonstrate size. And then you want information on why you think they're interested. So sometimes you can find information from the Census Bureau. I very often quote the Census Bureau on, because I most of the books I'm wanting to write these days are more personal and spiritual growth. I might look at how many people go to church or how many people are spiritual but not religious would probably be more accurate for my books, right? And usually you can find that information. There's other places to find information for your market analysis, like publications. You can find usually how many people subscribe to a popular publication. If there's a dog, publications on dogs or pets, you can find information on the size of their subscription list, things like that. But basically, the market analysis is an analysis of each group of people, each audience or market that would buy your book. And this is to convince the publisher and the agent, initially the agent, that there is a market for your books. There are people who will buy your book. That's what that is. Okay. And that brings us to the competitive analysis. These two, the market analysis and the competitive analysis, can make or break a book deal or make or break the possibility of getting a book deal. Because first, they want to know there are enough people out there to buy the book. Second, they want you to analyze what other books people might buy instead of yours. So a competitive analysis is two books, I'm going to buy this one or this one. They're both identical, basic, maybe not identical, but the same subject matter. They're both on dog training. I'm going to buy this one and not that one. That's competition. Sometimes we put in a list of complementary books. That's a book on dog training and then a book on dog training using an electric collar, because the book on dog training may mention the electric collar, but this book over here elaborates on that. So it's not direct competition, it's a complementary book. Okay, so sometimes we list those. Usually I will have a list of about 10 complementary books with the competitive analysis. Okay, so the competitive analysis is basically you doing a search on Amazon or Barnes and Noble for books like yours, books on the same topic. And they may not be identical. And that's fine, but you need to have some books that somebody might buy instead of yours. And so you have to go out and do the research. On Amazon, you can research by publication date so you can see what's coming down the pike. Very important because your book might not be published for a year or more. And so you want to know what books are going to be published in the next 6 months or 9 months or whatever. And often you will find those there. You also are looking for best-selling books. So, there's a way like on Amazon to check to see if it's a best-selling book, if it's on one of the top 100 lists. And so you can check because you don't want a book that's not selling. And I'll explain why in just a second. You also, but I don't want to forget to say this, you also need to have books that have been published in the last 3 to 5 years, or 1 to 3 years, 1 to 5 years. Okay. So you don't want books that are old. The only time that you're going to use a book that's old as your competition, old being more than 5 years, is if it is the best-selling book in its category and has been for a long time. So then if you have a book that's 25 years old and you say this continues to be the best-selling book in this category, but and on this topic, but I, but there is nothing else that's been published like it. Like there are books that have been published, but nothing like this one. This one tops the chart. Then you can use that. But you still need to have some newer books. Okay, so why is this so important? I want to go back to that. Competitive analysis, what that does, and let me just say, you can't do the same kind of competitive analysis an agent or a publisher can do because they pay annually for subscriptions to, I think it's Publishers Weekly, but they have subscriptions that allow them to see the actual sales data on a book. So they'll know how many copies a book sold. And that is what they're looking at. They're going to say, oh, he or she has given us these 5 books. So you only need 5 books for your competitive analysis. So they're going to look at those 5 books and say, oh, okay, they say these books are the competition. Let's see how well they sold. They're less interested in how your book is different. However, your competitive analysis does need to say this book that gives the pros and cons for each book. This is good in this way, this is good in that way, bad in that way. You want to stress the bad, the cons of the book, and then you want to say how your book is different. So I don't want to forget to say that either. So each for each competitive title, you will analyze it. The pros, the cons, and what makes your book different and better? That all goes in the competitive analysis. Okay, so back to why they're looking at this. If they can do the research and say, oh, well, this book didn't sell enough copies, or of the five, only one has sold well or earned back its advance, we don't want to publish this book. Now, an advance is an advance on sales. It's money paid to the author in advance of publication based on the publisher's calculations about how many books they think, how many copies of the book they think they can sell. So if they think they can sell 50,000 of them, you get a bigger advance. If they only think they can sell 5,000, you get a smaller advance. Okay? Anyway. So they're looking at the competitive analysis, and your advance will be based on that, but also their decision on whether or not to publish a book. So my book, The Author Training Manual, was pitched by my agent at the time to Writer's Digest Books, which was a small publishing house, very niche, right? But it was also published sent to some other places, like I can't remember whether it was Penguin Random House or anyway, some bigger publishing houses. And those publishing houses, while they published books on writing and publishing, they didn't specialize in that. They had lots of different imprints and books they were publishing. And so they looked at my competitive analysis, and there actually were no books identical to the author training manual, which was teaching you not how to write a book proposal, but how to create a business plan for your book so you create a more marketable book, okay? A book that will sell. But all I had were books on book proposals. And so the top selling book on book proposals was Mike Larson's book. He was my very first literary agent, he and his wife. And he taught me most of what I know about writing book proposals. And he wrote the best selling book on it. And it was just about to go into a second or third or fourth edition. I can't remember. I think maybe the second or third edition. And they looked at the numbers on that. It was like over 100,000 copies he'd sold. And he was, the publisher was having him do another edition. And they said to my agent, none of these competitive books have sold enough copies. And so we don't want to publish your book. Now, Writer's Digest Books had published Mike Larson's book, How to Write a Book Proposal. And they were very happy to publish my book. Okay, but that's what they're looking at. So your market analysis and your competitive analysis can make or break you getting a book deal. Okay, marketing and promotion. We can go through some of these more quickly now. Marketing and promotion is exactly what it sounds like. Some people say marketing and promotion plan or marketing plan. This is all about how you will help sell your book. It's a fallacy that publishing companies help you sell your book. Whether you self-publish or traditionally publish, you're going to have a marketing and promotion plan that you will carry out. And how much you're willing to do or can do can also make a difference in whether or not a publishing company, or an agent takes you on. Okay. Marketing and promotion plan is basically a bulleted list of the things you will do. Everything from send out email blasts to social media, a social media strategy, or going on a blog tour or a podcast tour or whatever. And we can talk more about that later. But that's basically what it is. It's just a bulleted list of all the things you'll do. About the author, very simple. That's your bio. Starting with most important things first. It's just a professional bio. You'll have an image on there, a photo on there. So you want to have some sort of a professional photo done, and then a bio explaining exactly why you are the best person to write this book. Number eight is the mission statement. The asterisk there is because this is not required. You can do this if you want. I like to put them near the beginning of my book or after my author about the author. Some people have put them before the marketing and promotions section because it says why they're committed to marketing their book and helping it sell. Anyway, I like to have a mission statement. It's one paragraph that just says why you want to write this book, why it's important to you. This is the only place in the book proposal where you write in the first person. Everything else is third person. I say that even though my literary agent just asked me to redo my overview in the second person. So, yeah, sometimes there's some leeway. She even said she had an author who she asked to write the overview in the first person. But typically, the whole book proposal is written in the third person. Okay. And I'll just mention this because I'm thinking about it. It also doesn't say there is a book yet. You write as if there will be a book. So the book will be, the book will cover, this chapter will be about. So it's a kind of clunky way to do it, but it's all in the third person as if the book doesn't exist yet because. In fact, the book doesn't exist yet, even if you've written the manuscript. You have a manuscript, you don't have a book, you don't have a published book, a printed book in your hand. Okay. Platform analysis. So, your platform analysis is you're going to go through and in sections, write down everything about how you have gotten yourself in front of your audience. The audience for this book. So, you might start with social media, or you might start with email, you might, or mailing list, you might start with publications. So, there are lots of ways to build what's called an author platform. That is your built-in audience for your book in your target market. And so, you want to let the agent and the publisher know how many people you can contact in one way or another when the book is released. That is what the platform analysis is all about. So you're going to have some numbers. So if you're on five different social media sites, you're going to say how many people follow you there, how many follow you on Facebook, Twitter, or X, LinkedIn, Instagram, Pinterest, whatever, right? You're going to have a list of all the times you've been published in magazines or newspapers or on blogs or how many times you've been on radio or whatever. So you'll list them, the radio station that you were interviewed on or whatever, and when. So you need dates, you need names. If you've spoken at conferences, the name of your session, the date of the conference, the name of the conference, all that kind of stuff. So that's all included in the platform analysis because it demonstrates that you are doing everything you can to get out in front of your audience to make it easier to sell books when they're released. Because when the book is released, it's too late. Then you're marketing and promoting to crickets. There's nobody there to when you say, "Here's my book, it's available for sale." There's nobody there to hear. Right? So you have to have an audience in place, a built-in audience in your target market. Okay? So the platform analysis demonstrates the size of your audience. Okay? 10 is the list of chapters. That is the table of contents for your book. Why is it called the list of chapters? To distinguish it from the table of contents. Because the table of contents for your book is a list of chapters. So that's the list of chapters. Very simple. You're just going to, list your chapters. 11 is chapter summaries. It's just what it sounds like. You're going to summarize each one of your chapters. Now, to me, this is the hardest part about writing a book proposal because you haven't written the book yet. And even if you're one of those people like me who can write a whole chapter off the top of my head without, just the title of the chapter, because I know what I want to write and I don't even really need an outline most of the time. It just flows through me. You still have to write a chapter summary for the book proposal. And so you have to sit down and decide what is in that chapter. And you have to be able to describe it. And that can be a paragraph or it can be 2 pages. Best if you can keep it to a page, but sometimes they go longer. It can include some bullet lists, of things that are in there, but you have to be creative and allow the reader, the agent, or the acquisitions editor to get a feel for your voice. So you want to actually write in a way that sounds like you, okay? That sounds like what your book will sound like. So you write these summaries. Now, I will say that writing the summaries is a really great exercise in planning out your book. So maybe you've done your sticky notes or your mind map, but now you're being asked to really get clear on what goes into every chapter. And maybe you've already done an outline for every chapter. Then your chapter summaries will be easy, right? But what's going to happen is you're going to write all your chapter summaries, and then you're going to say, now that I've figured out all my content, does that correspond with my overview, what I said my book was about? And you can fine-tune at this point and say, okay, my chapter summaries are, I've taken my book in a little different direction. I need to go back and redo my overview. Okay, so this is what I'm talking about. Make it more marketable. The other thing is with your competitive analysis. Once you've looked at all those books that will be competing with yours and what's good about them and bad about them, you can apply that to your concept. And you can make it better. That's why writing a book proposal is a way to evaluate your book for success. It's a way to hone it so that it becomes the most marketable book possible. And then last, you're going to have chapter summaries. I mean, sample chapters, sorry, sample chapters, as I talked about. 2 to 3 sample chapters, 10,000 words, 15,000 words, something like that. All right. Oh, I just put these up here. I don't want to do a lot of selling to you today, but if you're looking for some help with a book proposal, well, of course, my book, The Author Training Manual, which I didn't put up here, takes you through each one of these steps and helps you analyze your book and write your book proposal. But if you want something very simple, the Nonfiction Book Proposal Demystified, you can find it at booksbyninaamir.com. It's like $2.99, and it just goes through each section and tells you what needs to go there. And then I have this easy schmeasy book proposal template. It is a Word document with track changes, and you can with comments and track changes, and you just delete the track changes or you just follow it, and it will give you the basic format for a book proposal. All right. So query letter. Query letter is just a letter that you send, usually by email, to the acquisitions editor or the literary agent, and it's meant to entice them to want to see your book proposal. And eventually, if it's the acquisitions editor, purchase your book, agent to take you on as a client. Conventional wisdom is to keep the letter to one typed page. That's from the days when we actually did type these out and send them by mail. So I would stick close to that. Of course, they're single spaced because it's an email. Some agents prefer longer queries with more information, so they don't have as many questions. But this is what's going to get you the request for the book proposal. There are just six sections to it, sort of basic idea of what this is. You have an introduction. Some people don't have an introduction. Some people you make it personalize it in the introduction. I don't like that, because agents have very little time, and it can. I've been at conferences where they read query letters, and all the agents had bells, and if they weren't going to read any farther, they rang their bell. And sometimes the first five words were all that happened, all that got read before the bells were rung. So I always think about the agents not having a lot of time. They're not going to read very far unless they're compelled to do so. So if I'm going to have an introduction, it's not going to be to personalize it and say, I met you at such and such of a conference, or, my friend published with you, or whatever it is. I start with an introduction that is about the book, something compelling, a compelling paragraph, maybe two. Could be some bullet points that have some striking data or something. Then I go right into a pitch, a paragraph that has a sentence that says what the book's about, includes the title and the subtitle, and then maybe a sentence that follows that says the book is, going to be this long and or whatever, some details potentially. But you have book details. So I prefer to have the introduction or the pitch first, then a paragraph of book details, again, length, when it can be ready, anything important that they need to know. It has three parts. It's, based on something, whatever. And then a paragraph about you saying why you're the right person to write the book, and then some sort of conclusion. And if I'm going to personalize, I do it in the conclusion. I met you at X conference. My friend who published X book, she's your client. I actually had a query letter of mine included in a book about getting published. I can't think of what it was, Writer's Market, I think it was, one time. And I had in my last paragraph, this was the second agent I had, that I knew that she was raised by a mother who worked at the racetrack, and that she herself had saved some, rescued some racehorses that she rode, and that I was an equestrian from the time I was seven, and that I also had saved a racehorse. And, so I personalized it in that conclusion. Other than that, the conclusion is just, I have a book proposal ready. I'll be waiting to hear from you. Thank you very much. Right. And then you want to make sure you have your contact information. I've included the green elevator doors because this really is like an elevator pitch. Underneath that, you'll see a link to a blog post I wrote. That blog post ended up in the author training manual, but you can go there and read more about pitching. Okay, what is a literary agent? So to me, an agent is a writer's business partner. But they're also your foot in the door of a publishing house because they have the relationships with the acquisitions editors. And, so my agent was asked me, where would you like to be published? I told her some publishing houses. She said, oh, well, okay, I know some of the editors there. So the acquisitions editors trust the agents to only bring them viable product. projects. Okay, so they're not going to take something to an acquisitions editor that they don't think is worth publishing. And that's what the acquisitions editor is relying on. And so for you, that's what you want. You want somebody who can pitch something and it'll be heard. Because when you pitch without an agent, it's very possible that your letter ends up in what they call the slush pile and gets read by some lowly, assistant or reader. Not reader like of a book, but they have readers, people who just read all these pitches that come in. They get hundreds of them every day. And so you want to make sure that your pitch, your query letter goes straight to an acquisitions editor, and an agent can help you do that. They also then become your liaison with the publisher. So if there are any problems, they can help you. Now, agents do earn a commission. They only get paid when you get paid. So, I want you to be very well aware of that they are making no money for months and months and months. And then if you don't get an advance, if you get a deal but no advance, they still don't get any money. And then most publishing companies, so you'll get your advance paid maybe in two or three installments, usually like maybe a little at the beginning, some in the middle, some at the end, sometimes at the beginning, at the end, middle and end, just depends. And then until your book earns back its advance, meaning it sells enough copies to cover whatever amount you got, $5,000, $10,000, $50,000, you have to earn that, your book has to earn that much in sales before you or the agent get any more money. That's just how it works. It's an advance on sales. And once the advance has been earned back, you and the agent start making money. Okay, so you do lose a little money in the process of using an agent. Oh, I'm sorry, that's not 5%. It should say 15%. I apologize. That's a typo. So it's 15% on domestic sales and 20% on foreign sales is typical. So again, make sure you correct that in your notes if you're taking notes. It's 15% on domestic sales. So you lose money in the process of using an agent, but you gain someone to fight for your rights, your concerns, or a bigger advance. They know what's in a contract, that sort of thing. Now, I've also hired literary attorneys to look at contracts, both the agency contract and the publishing contract. Right now, I have an agent who is a lawyer, so I don't feel like I need to do that. But anyway, they're in your corner, okay? And again, just be sure that, I don't want anyone to think I'm giving you bad information. It's 15% on domestic sales. And then these are all websites that you can go to find an agent, okay? Or go to a conference. I have met most of the agents I've had at conferences. I had one agent who I didn't. Okay, so I'm going to run through this pretty quickly, the pros and cons of traditional publishing. To me, the pros are that you get a team of professionals to help you your book succeed. Okay? These are people, this is all they do is they produce books. I want to work with them. They know what color my cover should be. They know what title is going to work. This is just all they do. Typically, you don't need to pay for editing or design with a publishing company, with a true traditional publishing company. They will provide you with editors and they will design your book for you, the cover and the interior. And editing is the most expensive part of self-publishing. Okay? So sometimes you have, if you've never, if you don't think you're a good writer, you might need to hire an editor first and pay for that. But editing is definitely the most expensive part of becoming published. And I can talk more about that in the Q&A if you want. I think a pro is that you might get paid in advance on sales. To me, an advance on sales is my marketing budget. So if I have something in my marketing plan that costs $2,000, like someone to set up a podcast tour for me, I may not be able to do that if I don't get an advance. But if I get an advance of $10,000, even after I put away some money for taxes, I have money to do that. So that's how I look at the advance. And Otherwise, if I'm self-publishing, I got to do that on my own. Nobody's given me any money. A pro is that the book is distributed in bookstores. It's very difficult to get a self-published book into bookstores, and a bookstore is a new is an extra distribution channel, another way to sell books. If you are with a bigger publisher and they get you the end cap or something, you know, all these things are very helpful. I think there's more clout with traditional publishing than self-publishing. I just think it there is. People respect that more. And you might get some help marketing. A little. Most of the marketing is done by the writers, by the authors, but you might get a little help depending on the publisher. Now, what are the cons of traditional publishing? I think it's the long lead time to publication. I've been very lucky with Writer's Digest with my books. They were all released in less than a year from the time I turned them in. This current book deal I have with Books That Save Lives, well, with Mango, it was going to be out in like 6 months. 6 months was the plan. But that's not happening. So now it's with Books That Save Lives. It's, well, I guess since the time I turned in the manuscript, it's going to be just under a year. But that's a whole nother story about what happened there. Anyway, you don't have all the control. Like they're going to decide on the title and the cover and things like that. But you can usually, you know, have conversations about it. So, but you don't have control over all the details. And you're also going to make less money on book sales because both the publisher and the agent are going to take a cut. Okay, so let me go through this. I know we're running a little late, but hopefully you've gotten lots of information so far. I'll try to do this very quickly. My experience as a traditionally published author in an ever-changing traditional publishing landscape. Working with agents has its ups and downs. Every agent is different. I have worked with agents, three agents. So Mike Larson and his wife Elizabeth, I worked with both of them, and then I worked with another agent because they sent me off with one of my projects somewhere else because they said they didn't want to represent that one, and so I had to find another agent. So that was my third agent. Anyway, those three agents, they only pitched to the big publishing houses, and if they you know, they might have 10 places they were going to publish, you know, we'd say there are five or six main publishing houses, but, you know, maybe they had a list of 10 that they thought they could get a big enough advance to make it worth their while. And once they got no's, they were done. Other agents are going to help you, you know, they're going to pitch your book till it sells, even if they make no money on it. It just depends on the agent. Some agents don't want to be contacted much. Some don't want to tell you about the responses they're getting. Yeah, just when you choose an agent, find out a little bit about how they operate and see whether it's a good fit for you. Okay. I've had really good agents. Oh, and having an agent doesn't mean you're going to sell your book. As I said, like my first three agents did not sell any books. But I still like working with agents. I feel like I have somebody in my corner who knows more than I do. I know a lot, but they know more. Working with publishers, you would think that I'd be happy that when Writer's Digest went belly up, that my book and the books ended up with Penguin Random House, very prestigious publishing company, you know, huge, but my books are lost there. And I don't even know why they bought that line of books because they don't really want any more writing books and they're doing nothing with them. And they wouldn't reproduce How to Blog a Book, my best-selling book, in print form. They would only do the ebook. And so I found working with a big publisher much less appealing or satisfying than working with a small publisher. Writer's Digest Books was a small publisher, and I had a great relationship with the publisher, the person who held that title. I could email him. I met with him and pitched him ideas. It was, you know, we changed my subtitle together. He was always open to talking with me. So, yeah. But overall, I like working with publishers. I've had good editors. I've felt like they've known what they were doing. And yeah. Now, in terms of industry flux. I'm going to drop down just here for a minute to the bottom here. Industry flux. So that's changing all the time. So Writer's Digest was doing great, then it wasn't, and it went bankrupt. And my books were sold, and that was a very confusing thing for me and for all the writers to figure that out. What we needed to do or whether our books would be available. My deal with Mango Publishing that I got on my own, and I always wanted to be published by Mango, and Brendan Knight, the publisher, and I knew each other from the Women's National Book Association and the San Francisco Writers Conference. Anyway, it was this great thing that we finally got this book after a decade, really. Well, 5 years with her. We finally got a deal for it, and then Mango downsized, and she got let go. She had an imprint with Mango called Books That Save Lives, and she took it with her and she opened her own publishing company. And in my contract, there was something called an assignment clause. And I met with the publisher at Mango, and we made the decision together to assign my book to Books That Saves Lives and Brenda Knight. And so the industry's changing all the time. So I thought I had a deal with Mango. I didn't have a deal with Mango. So just to say, you have to be aware that things are constantly changing in the publishing industry. Contracts. What I want to say about contracts is some of them are easy to read and some of them are not. When I worked with Larson and Pamada as my agents, they had a contract that was so easy to read. Like, I mean, it was written for anybody, and I never needed anybody to look at it. Publishing contracts tend to be very similar, but the rights are different and all that kind of stuff. So you do want to have an agent who knows their stuff, or hire both for the agency contract and the publishing contract. Even if you have an agent, you could still, with the publishing contract, you can hire a literary attorney. And I have done that. It's expensive, but it can, and the problem is that like the agencies don't necessarily want to change anything, the publishers don't want, but at least even if you don't get much changed, you at least know what you're getting into. So I highly recommend that. We talked a little bit about wait times. Usually we say that if you get a publishing contract, the likelihood is your book won't see the light of day for a year to a year and a half. Sometimes it's longer. So you can't be in a hurry, okay? But you can go on and write your next book and pitch your next book. But I have been lucky that all of mine have been been released within a year or so. I'm like industry friends. Okay, so that should be trends. Industry trends and zeitgeist. I should have done a better proofreading job. Industry trends and zeitgeist. So this is something agents are well way more aware of than us. Like we'll see a book on mermaids, and we'll decide to write a book about mermaids. And by the time we've pitched that book to agents, the trend to publish books on mermaids is over and done. Like they already know that nobody's going to take another book on mermaids. So having an agent helps you stay aware of the industry trends and zeitgeist. You can also get a free and also a low-priced subscription to Publishers Lunch and Publishers Weekly, and you'll see what deals are being made. And so that can be helpful. Working with editors, I would just say you have to not be attached to your words, only fight for the changes, for not making a change when it really changes the meaning or it's very important to you for some reason. But you will have at least two editors at the publishing house. You'll have a developmental editor looking at the big picture issues, and then you'll have a line or copy editor who is working on sentence structure. And you usually will get a chance to approve or unapprove whatever they're doing. And last, advocating for yourself. I would say that you need to be a good advocate for yourself and your book. Because even with an agent, it's you who's going to go to the agent and say, this is what I need. This is what I need somebody to help me fight for. Okay, so we're going to move into Q&A. I would like we're going to I'm going to let you guys raise your hands. Well, you can type them in the chat or you can raise your hands. While you're getting ready for your questions, I'm going to do a very short sales pitch, hopefully not more than a couple minutes. Okay. So if you would bear with me just for a few moments, I want to tell you about the Nonfiction Writers University, which I see as a shortcut to becoming a nonfiction author. It provides for you the education you need to succeed. No matter what type of writing you want to do, whether it's journalism or blogging or writing books. So, what happens for most people is they pay a whole lot of money to lots of different experts, like to all their programs, things like this, but they might pay thousands of dollars. And that's what ends up happening is they take all these different programs to try to learn something about getting published or being a nonfiction author, and they spend a ton, and then they're just confused. And they actually haven't gotten the information they needed. So, in the Nonfiction Writers University, I ensure that you get the information you need, and you can do a trial for a month for a dollar. After that, it's $47 per month. But for that dollar, you get to go in for a month and check it out, and you'll have access to everything. What's in there? So it's a really comprehensive program. The first thing I always tell people to do is to go through the author training series, Author Training 101, Craft Books That Sell, Author Training 102, Write Your Best-Selling Book Fast, Author Training 103, Develop Your Platform and Promotion Plan, and Author Training 104, Build a Business Around Your Books. So that program sells for $997 by itself, but you receive it as part of the Nonfiction Writers University membership. And you get access immediately with your dollar trial month. In addition, you get monthly group author coaching sessions with me. That's when you get to show up and get all your questions answered or your issues addressed. And that's worth $200 or more every month. Okay. So all year long, 12 sessions a month, sorry, 12 sessions a year. You also get a private Facebook page where you can ask questions and connect with people. The people who do use that Facebook page get tons of value out of it because I do answer their questions and coach them there. You also get the full archive of 7 years of coaching calls, events, assignments, and challenges, which I value at $300 per month. We're just now going through all the coaching calls and events and assignments and challenges, and making sure they're labeled so you can easily find things by topic. You can search by topic, but we have found that it needs to be upgraded. So that's in the process right now. And then there are a ton of bonuses, including my Easy Schmeezy book proposal template that I told you about, an audio course on blogging books, and then all six of my Write Nonfiction Now ebooks, that series, as well as two other books, the one I mentioned, Demystifying the Nonfiction Book Proposal, and the Authorpreneur one. And then there's a library of training videos and more stuff. And even more important than most of that is that when you become a member, you gain access to 60 plus interviews with experts. So this is just a sprinkling of the experts that are in there because there are 60 of them. So you get access to all of that. So I'll leave you with this. Basically, that's $200 of value monthly just for the author coaching, the group author coaching, but you're only paying $47 a month. If you ever wanted to invest in author coaching with me, this is a fraction of the price. It is group, but you learn from the group. You learn from other people's questions. And then, of course, if you add in the author training program, the archives, the bonuses, it's over $25,000 in additional value that you get immediately when you start your 30-day trial. Now, again, after 30 days, you're going to pay $47 a month. Anyway, it's an affordable solution to get everything you need and want as to become a nonfiction author and writer. So that's my pitch to you today. You can become a member at ninaamir.com, NFWU, Nonfiction Writers University trial, NFWU trial. All right, so let's move into coaching. Thinking, I'm going to just leave this on the screen and I'm going to change my view so I can see all of you, all two of you, since nobody else showed up, but that's okay. All right, so Beth, I see your question. And you can unmute and we can chat. Okay, so your question was, would it be good to write the book proposal chapter summaries before the competitive and market analysis? You could do that, Beth. I don't, because if I, when I'm doing the competitive analysis, I am looking at the books that I see as competition for the what they've done well and what they've not done well. Also, what they might have included and not included. And I'm looking at my book to see, oh, I could include that. Like, that was a good idea. I didn't think about that. Right? And so I want to know that before I write the chapter summaries. Of course, I could go back and rewrite them if you want to do it that way. But that's how I look at it. In terms of the market, again, once I've written the chapter summaries, I do a lot of tweaking. So I go back to the overview and tweak. I might go back to the markets and tweak, because maybe I didn't include something, or I included something and now I'm not really addressing their needs for that market.
Yeah,
That
that's
make sense?
helpful. Thanks.
Yeah. Okay. And then your other question was, do you have to have a huge social media platform already for small publishers? Okay, so this is the question that comes up so often. And if you're at a conference, they're going to say you need to have six figures of something. Six figures of an email list, six figures of a social media platform, even if it's across several platforms, or sites. I disagree. Okay, because I don't have six figures. I didn't have six figures of anything when I published How to Blog a Book. And that book, How to Blog a Book, the premise behind that was to, blog so that you developed a platform, so you developed a readership, and then the publishers would want your book, right? And maybe they'd even find you. Well, I didn't have it. And before that, I had worked 8 years to build a social media platform and almost gave up because I didn't have what I thought was a big enough platform. And then I decided this was just something I needed to enjoy and embrace because it was just part of being an author, right? If I was going to be an author, I had to build a platform. And so 4 years later, my platform had doubled. It still wasn't six figures, but I landed book deals. I landed an agent, actually more than one agent along the way, and I got the book deals. So, and now I have an agent who is pitching to bigger publishing houses for me, not on a topic related to writing and publishing. So we're doing personal and spiritual growth. And I still don't have six figures. Now, will I get a publishing deal? We'll see. But I had one client who he tried blogging his book some and tried doing a little social media, really didn't do any. And he landed an agent and she got him a publishing deal. Like 2 months later, he had a publishing deal and he did not have a platform. My client that if you read any of the emails I sent, I was saying I had a client who just wrote to me and said, you taught me all the steps, blah, blah, blah. He didn't have much of a platform. He spoke at a few conferences. He might have written a couple blog. He had a blog of his own. It didn't have a big readership. He might have done a few blog posts here and there for other people. And it really didn't have much of anything. And he approached a bunch of different publishers, and it took him, I think, a year, but he landed himself a book deal. So do you have to have that? No. Do you need to at least be working on it? Yes, because in your marketing and promotion plan, you're going to have to say what you're going to do. And if you plan to, let's say your email list is small and you decide you're going to go to Substack, you have to say, I started a Substack and it's my goal to increase that, my readership there. And so something has to be in place already. And you have to be working on it, and need to be able to just show that you're willing to work at that you know how important it is, and you're willing to work at it. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah, and when you were talking about understanding that your audience and the different groups that you would be targeting. I think that was a an aha moment for me because, you know, it's not just the average person, and in my example, who is trying to heal their career. It's also because I belong to the National Career Development Association, you know, huge organization throughout the country, and you know, done keynotes for them and et cetera, et cetera, attended conferences. And so while I don't have a big platform, I have some really unique groups outside of just the average reader, because career counselors could also be looking at this book.
Right. And so, oops, lost you guys for a second. So once you're more aware also of who your market is, then you can put your effort into building platform in those areas.
That's where I, yeah, bing, bing, bing. So, but that, you know, out of everything, that is the one thing that intimidates me is that I've always heard, you know, you've had to have, 50, 60,000 people in your, platform and, you know, kind of defeating in the past.
Yeah, that always upsets me because at conferences, that's all you'll hear. Actually, you don't you hear six figures and people are like, there's no way, and like it's gonna take me years, and how am I gonna do that? And I don't even wanna do it. And if you're going to go with small publishing houses, it may not be necessary. It really won't. And I hate that people feel defeated before they start. And then they'll say, I'm gonna go self-publish a book because I'll do that and then I'll try to get it traditionally published, or I'll traditionally publish the next one. But if your book doesn't sell well, publishers don't want it. There are books that are self-published. Well, and you'll hear that too. Nobody will ever pick up your self-published book. Not true. Sometimes they do, but it's because the book is selling, right? They'll get a traditional publishing deal. And so people feel defeated and they choose something they don't want. They don't want to be self-published. They don't want to be a publisher and have a publishing business. They just want to write their books and they give up. They give up on a dream of traditional publishing. So I
Yeah,
would say
thanks.
go for it anyway. Some of the university presses, some of the, I don't know whether in your case, I think there's a publisher called Career Press. I don't know how big they are, but you can go to any website, any publisher's website, and you can find out if they accept unagented submissions. If they accept unagented submissions, then you can submit. And if you go to their website, they're going to tell you what they need. So they may only want two or three sections of your book proposal. You know, they may say we want a competitive analysis and overview, whatever. And you can just give them that. Or if there's an email address, so sometimes they have an online form. But if there's an email address and says submit here and these are the sections we want, if it were me, I would be submitting two documents. I'd say, here are the sections you asked for, but I have a complete book proposal. And I have attached that as well, because now you're showing that you actually know what the industry wants and needs. And something to know about these book proposals is that the traditional publisher takes your proposal, your business plan for a book, and turns it into their business plan for a book. So they're going to pull out of your book proposal all kinds of information. And then they'll take like the competitive analysis and they will do further analysis to decide, you know, how many books have sold or whatever. I didn't mention sometimes you can Google and you can find out how many books somebody sold. So
Perfect. Thank you.
you're welcome. Jerry, do you have some questions? No?
Not right now. This was a very good review for me. I've read your book proposal book, and I used it to create the book proposal for my book, and I'm going to do it again. So it's a good review.
Oh,
Thank you.
good. You're welcome. I will mention about literary agents because I didn't, I was aware of the time and I didn't want to keep blabbering on, but since we have a few extra minutes, not everyone has had as many agents as I have. And so you might say, well, what happened? Did they all fire her or what? What happened was my first literary agent was, or the agency was Larson and Pamada. They ran the San Francisco Writers Conference. I won the pitch conference contest 1 year with fiction, and which hasn't been published yet. And I, Elizabeth took me on for a women's nonfiction book because she only did women's nonfiction. Otherwise, she was only doing fiction. And she pitched it to like six or eight publishers when they didn't, the big ones. And when they didn't take it, she said, I'm done. Michael, who wrote the book, How to Write a Book Proposal, was such a stickler that I couldn't ever get him to the point where he would pitch. He was always working on the book proposal, always. It was never perfect for him, And I had this other idea for a book, and they sent me to this other publishing, this other, they sent me to find another agent. And so I found an agent at a really big agency that anyone would want to be with. And I had to have them alter the contract for one book instead of all my books. And so she took that book to what was used to be the Book Expo America. And when she didn't sell it after that, she was also done. And now I couldn't ask her to represent my next book because I altered the contract to only be a one book deal. So when Larson and Pamada were not selling anything or pitching for me and they were sending me elsewhere, I fired them. So they had a 30-day clause. Like I said, their contract was so easy to read. I didn't need any help. I just wrote to them and said, I'm ending our relationship. And I stayed friends with them forever. Like we're still, my Elizabeth's gone, but Mike and I are still buddies. So anyway, and he still mentors me some. My fourth agent, sold one, two books for me to Writer's Digest. We had a very nice relationship. Everything was good. She was the one who had the horses. She was a former policewoman, and she decided to go back to being a policewoman and kind of disappeared. She just wasn't ever there. I couldn't ever find her or get a hold of her or whatever. She just changed her career back to what it was. And so I sort of lost her. So at a certain point, I started looking for new agents. And I'm lucky because of all my work with the San Francisco Writers Conferences and speaking at other conferences besides that, I have met so many agents and sat in rooms with them in a very casual way. And because of the Nonfiction Writers University and my blog, Write Nonfiction Now, I've interviewed so many agents. So I just had a plethora of people I could contact, but I was at the San Francisco Writers Conference with my fifth agent, and told him I was looking for an agent. I still hadn't fired the policewoman. And he looked at all of my many, 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 many book ideas and was very excited and created this plan, this like 2 year plan or 3 year plan for how we were going to publish all my books. But then he got stumped with the one on, well, he sold one for me, but that was still a writing book. And I really did all the instigation with the publisher to, anyway, he sold that. And then he started working on the book about writing for change, which is what Books That Saves Lives has now, which is under contract. And he pitched for 2 years, and he wouldn't listen to me. After a year, I said, the title's wrong. We need to change the title. He said, no, not yet. He stopped wanting to hear anything I had to say, and it became a very parental situation, like where he would say, you should know better. Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? You should know better. And it took away all my confidence, and it just wasn't any good. And I was going to fire him as soon as he sold the damn book, and then he fired me. So I did get fired once as his client, but I was happy. But that relationship set me back for 4 years. And I didn't publish anything, not even self-publish for 4 years, other than my blog posts and stuff. I wrote a few articles, but really didn't do much. And it was only in 2024 that I picked myself up by my bootstraps and said, "That's not who you are. You have a track record, just start moving forward." And that was when I started pitching. And the agent I have now used to work with my old agent. He was one of the founding partners in that agency, and she had a very similar experience to mine. And so we kind of bonded over that. But also, I contacted her early on and said, "Would you be interested in hearing from me, my ideas?" And she said yes. And so it took me a long time to pitch her. But when I did, she was willing to. And I don't know, I believe the universe. It has your back. And so she was the one who responded. And so I went with her. I will say, after all that, talking about my experience with agents, she's very slow. I have had to learn patience. She says she's very good. She has gotten some of her clients big advances. She just said it takes, if you want someone fast, I'm not the person. And so I tend to be a very fast moving person. So this has just been a lesson in patience, and we'll see where that gets me. But to conclude this whole story about my agents, I would just say, if you're looking for an agent, make sure you have conversations with them, and if possible, speak to authors who have worked with them so that you get a really clear picture of who this agent is. There's an agent I know who's a lawyer, and his main job is being a lawyer. And I had a client, an author coaching client, who had something happen and needed to get a hold of him, like ASAP, and he couldn't get a hold of him for a couple of days because he was off being a lawyer and being an agent was his second job. And then there was more to that story, but after that, people would mention his name and I would say, "I don't recommend him. Don't recommend my last agent either, especially not to a woman." So speak to people. Try to get a feel for who this person is before you sign a contract. And I would recommend that if you go with a small publishing company, that you spend the money on a literary attorney. I have the names of two. And again, you're spending a lot of money and you may not be able to change anything in your agency contract or your publishing contract, but at least you know what you're getting into. So. All right, after all that, any other questions for me? No?
It was fantastic. Thank you so much, Nina.
You're very welcome, Beth. I hope to see you soon. Jerry, thank you for showing up. I was surprised when you signed up.
Well, I feel like I need the review, so I got the review. Thank you.
Yeah, and you'll both get
It's
the
very
replay
good.
and you can keep it. You're welcome, and you'll both have the replay
Sure.
and can keep it. Everybody gets the replay. You can keep it. And if you have questions later on, just send me an email and I'm happy to answer them.
Okay, will do. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Welcome. Yeah, and keep me posted. If you go through this
I
process, I would love
will.
to hear how it's going for you.
Thank
Okay.
you. I
All
will be
right.
in
Thanks for
touch.
showing up today. And go out there and achieve some inspired results by getting a book publishing deal.
Okay,
Bye,
thanks.
everyone.